Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest, and I'm guessing he has a lot of love letters in him to write. I don't know, have you ever written love letters? Do you write them?
Not since I was a kid. Who writes letters?
Oh.
I don't. I'm not so good at writing letters anymore.
Okay, good. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
And my guest is Sean Moniger, Reverend Sean, of the Unity Center of Norwalk. And I want to just...
In Norwalk, Connecticut.
Norwalk, Connecticut, yes, because there's a Norwalk, California.
Yes, there
is. We don't want people looking here. I'm going to just go right to you and tell you to let us know your radio show and some websites where we can find you.
Okay, well, hey, everybody.
Before we start to talk.
I'm Sean. I'm Reverend Sean here, and I'm so grateful to be here with Janet. Okay, I get to serve as minister of Unity Center of Norwalk in Norwalk, Connecticut. And if you want our website, it's www.unitycenterps.org. It's P as in practical, S as in spirituality.org.
Is that what it stands for?
Yeah, we just changed our name from Unity Center for Practical Spirituality to Unity Center of Norwalk.
Okay.
Because we want to be easier to find.
Okay. I have a feeling you're going to want to find him after listening to him.
Yeah,
so
but
that's
it's good. unitycenterps.org. And my personal is thegoodshow.com.
thegoodshow.com. This is your radio show?
OW.com. Oh, yeah, thegoodshow.com. I got a little lost there, Janet.
Hello.
Well, that's my radio show, The Good Show with Reverend Sean. I'm a little on hiatus right now, but I've got a year's worth of shows with great interviews. I've got John Edward and Lucy Arnaz and Kathy Lee Gifford and David Friedman.
Okay.
And I interviews and great music and a lot of friends of mine, some fascinating discussions.
Okay.
A year's worth of shows on my website, thegoodshow.com.
I'm going to tune into that later myself.
Yeah.
I want to talk about you. Last night, you were at dinner, you were talking about, you know, I lit her and I lit him, and I was a little in the dark, even without that lighting. And then I caught on through some miracle that you were a lighting person for theater or
I worked at Don't Tell Mama in New York City for 21 years
as a lighting, and you were the lighting
lights and sound.
Uh-huh.
Lights and sound for nightclub acts.
So I'm curious, how did you come to do that?
I lied my way into
it. Oh,
I wanted to work in show business.
Yeah.
And I heard about in 1984 I did for community theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, McKeesport Little Theater, actually. I was doing lights. You know McKeesport Little Theater?
I do.
Oh, my goodness.
I know McKeesport later.
That's funny. I was doing lights that for that particular production. I had acted there, and I used that term loosely.
Oh, so you were always in that. It's not like you. Yes, okay.
I really wanted to. As a teenager, sold shoes. I was a really great shoe salesperson.
Uh-huh.
I loved selling shoes, but that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in theater.
Yes.
And I still consider church theater.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, church.
And you're
theater came out
And you're
of
selling
church.
Some different method by which you can walk even longer.
Exactly. It offends some people, but I still say it's a product.
Yes, of course.
We have available. But, yeah, I was doing lights for this show at McKeesport Little Theater. It was a basic show, lights up, lights down. And this female impersonator who was going to Provincetown, that was a friend of mine, it was a drag queen,
mm-hmm.
I knew, was going to Provincetown. And they said, do you know anybody who does lights and sound? He said, oh, my friend Sean does.
So.
And I lied and said I knew more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I went. Mm-hmm. My relationship was on the it was ending in Pittsburgh. I had no prospects for work or anything, so I went to Provincetown for the summer. Turns out I was good.
Oh, so in other words, you did know more than you thought you did.
Well, that's the thing. I lied consciously.
Yes.
But there was something in me. And then in New York, I wanted to move to New York from there in the second season.
Mm-hmm.
I did well enough the first season. They hired me back for a second. And there I met people, and a woman said, come live with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard Don't Tell Mama was looking for somebody, and I'd never been to Don't. She said, that's right, and she performed there, my friend Nancy Timpanero. And so she made a phone call from the pay phone on the street, because mm-hmm. it was 1985.
For those of you who don't know what pay phones are, Google it.
And they hired me sight unseen. And I went to New York, and I really still didn't know very much. And what I did was I put a ladder on the stage at 2 in the morning. I focused lights on it with color. I experimented with colors.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that's what I was good at. I got my bourbon and my cigarettes and a Karen Mason cassette, and I lit that ladder. And that's how I developed a style. And I went on to win several Mac Awards over the years, but it was still always a job. It was never meant to be a career, the lighting thing. I didn't know what I was going to do, and one day I had a spark.
Okay, so I want to ask you about that spark because
uh-huh.
you're a minister now.
Yeah, I am.
And it occurred
to me. The only thing
me,
left after all those years at Don't Tell
Well,
Mama.
It occurred to me on the way here this morning that you have taken a short step. You have gone from lighting people from the outside to lighting them from the inside.
I love that. Thank you.
Sometimes a little shift can be a universe away.
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, I had some
What made you take that step? What
I had some spiritual training in as a kid. I got beyond now. I lay me down to sleep in prayer. There was a faith in me that there was something big that loved me.
Well, I think there are people who have. I think there's such a thing as spiritual sophistication. And I think some people have it, just like some people can draw brilliantly. I think some people have that, and evidently you did.
Yeah, I had a faith that there was something that loved me, and it was invisible. Now, I call it God. Still call it God, but it's not a person. It gets to be less and less of a person and more of a principle or energy or law. I'm a New Thought minister. I'm a Unity minister, mm-hmm. which is New Thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I put down some substances in my life. You know, that's the best I can say on the radio. I stopped using some things, and I found some people to help me. And they told me pray. And they told me to pray like this. And I did, and my life changed.
But did you do this within, like, a 12-step program?
I can't tell you that on the radio.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
That's called Anonymous.
I didn't know. Oh, I'm sorry. Do we want to just take this?
Not at all. I like to say it that way.
No, it's instructive.
You're not in one of those things.
That's right.
You don't have to. Uh-huh. But, yeah, I found some people, too.
Oh, that's what, okay.
Like-minded people.
I see. I didn't know. Okay, that's important because you can't probably do it without.
Well, some people can, but they seem to stay pretty angry.
So talk about, I want you to talk about forgiveness because we did that. We talked about that last night.
We're doing a tremendous amount of forgiveness teaching.
And you wanted to start with. Can you talk about what you had to forgive in your own life?
Oh, my parents, myself, my childhood.
Will you talk about that? Because that was so instructive.
I would be happy to. I remember once I was at a place with like-minded people who a person was telling their story.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said was, I'm tired of waiting around for my parents to give me a good childhood.
Oh.
I thought, that's me. I'm sitting here waiting for my childhood to not have happened.
Yes.
In order for me to be set free from it.
Now, what was difficult about it?
Oh, well, I was emotionally abused, verbally abused, sexually abused.
Oh.
There was a lot of drunks in my family and just a tremendous amount of confusion. Now, I'll tell you, my ministry is based on that we are inherently good. We've always been good. We will always be good. That's why after my first time at Unity, I came back. Because they talked about Leviticus and all those abominations to God and man. And I found out I wasn't one of them.
Oh, good. That's
I found
aha
out
moment,
that
isn't it?
In God, we are all, and there are no exceptions to this. No exceptions. You can play any card you want. We're talking about truth, not personality. There are no exceptions to the fact that we are all loved in principle. Can't not be, no matter. But that doesn't mean we behave well.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't mean we feel good. Some of us have done atrocious things in our forgetting that we're good. I work with children.
So the issue is to get back to
remembering.
Uh-huh.
If I remember that I'm good, I worked with children. I know we're getting off the other topic, but
no,
I think this is actually kind of good because this is the experience of forgiveness. And I worked at a place called Boys and Girls Village. I was a volunteer there for a few years in Connecticut. And these kids are in there. They're all in there. Most of them came out of a hospital, either because somebody else hurt them or they've hurt themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of autism going on, a lot of stuff. Some of these kids will never see their parents again
because
their parents so forgot.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd sit in a circle and we'd start with, this circle is good and I am good.
By the
good.
Way, that their parents forgot seems to me so powerful right away because it lays on the parents forgot, not my fault that I did anything.
I'm going to explain this
in
one
second.
Oh, no, you're doing nothing wrong, Janet.
I'm a little overexcited.
Me too. So I hope you don't mind. I'm kind of hogging the airwaves here.
Take it back, yeah.
So we started with, this circle is good and I'm good in this circle, and they repeat it. And at the beginning, they had troubles with this, and I said, well, let me explain something to you. A lot of people haven't treated you very well. And the reason for that is they forgot they were good. And when they forgot they were good, they forgot you were good. And some of you agreed with them. And week after week after week, you know, the walls get prayed up. I wasn't allowed to talk about God with these children.
And why is that?
Because it's not a religious institution. And some of their parents could, you know, this is state run. And so you can't talk about God. It's like I can't go into a high school or grade school and talk about God. It's conflict.
I see. Yes.
Because everybody has different faiths. But I could talk about good. I could talk about
it's just an extra O.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's more understandable.
Yes.
I can't grasp what God is. Don't have too big for me to understand. But I can understand that I am good. Mm-hmm. I just can't understand how if I hate myself. But I just had to accept I am good. Always go. There's no bad opposite. It's capital G, no opposite. So with the kids, and one day we're going around. There were two remarkable things that happened with these children. One was I was away for a week, and when I came back the next week, we're going around. I am good. And the facilitator said, I forgot to tell you last week when you weren't here. One of the kids had a big upset and started throwing chairs and things. And two of the other kids came to me and said he forgot he was good.
Oh,
and I thought, oh, they did that. And then I would ask them, what – I said, you guys are here to learn something. You're here to learn how to be big in the world. This is your training ground with each other and all your upset to learn how to be big in the world. And I said, do you know what being big is? And we got it down that being big is when you want to steal and you don't steal. Being big is when you want to lie and you don't lie. And one day a kid said, being big is when you want to spit on somebody and you don't. And I thought, well, that's good. But another young girl, you know how we can find somebody less fortunate? We can be in a circle of misfortune and find somebody worse.
Yes.
And pick on them. Make them the target of our pain. And this one young girl, she's lovely. She's probably 14, but she had a lot of physical issues. And she said, being big is when you remember somebody is good even when they forgot you were good. And I said, you've just become the teacher of the class today.
So everybody, excuse me, I'm just trying not to bawl here. So this is a very easy concept, really. This is easier to sell than shoes. This is a natural.
Actually, it isn't.
It isn't, because it seems to me you're giving something people they know they already have.
They don't want it.
Oh, they don't?
No, because we still think guilt is redemption.
Oh, guilt is just an indication that you should think about what you've done, isn't it?
But some people think that's the past to get away with doing it.
Oh.
A lot of people will use guilt as their redeemer so they can keep going on with the poor behavior.
Can you say how that works? I don't get it.
You know, I'm terrible for doing this. And then they keep doing it. It's like a serial killer. I should not kill people. And then they go on killing people rather than I am good and I don't have to kill people.
Oh, so saying I'm terrible is like the...
The pass.
Uh-huh.
To maintain the poor behavior and the self-loathing. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
You know, to keep maintaining this loathing.
And yes,
I didn't want to loathe myself anymore and I didn't want to loathe my family. So that's where the forgiveness comes back into my family.
Okay, go.
I wanted to forgive my family, but I didn't understand how.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to a medium. We do not preach going to mediums in Unity, but I went to one who was very effective out in Staten Island. Camille was her name. And my parents came through. And at the end of the day, they both asked for forgiveness, and I thought, you know, with all they put me through, they still want something. And I thought, but I'll get around to it when I'm good and ready, because forgiveness is for my benefit. And then I talked to a healer friend of mine who said, no, forgiveness sets everybody free.
Yes, if you keep someone on the hook, you're on that same hook.
But they're still on the hook, too.
Yes, yes.
And he said, you don't want to keep them bound because you're mad at them. And I thought, you're right, I don't. My anger isn't...
Now, why don't you?
Because my anger isn't worth holding somebody back from their good.
Oh.
Yes, they did what they did. But I can set myself free from that, because they're never going to, quite frankly. But I can set them free from what they're forgetting. And in, you know, in those places, those rooms I like to go to with like-minded individuals, I had done some work. And at 33 years old, I found out that I had no tools to parent myself. And I thought, oh, my parents had no tools to parent me.
Oh, yes.
We're even.
Yes.
We're even. Why were they supposed to have tools just because they could have children? They didn't know any, but they really didn't know. I don't like the term, they did the best they could.
I don't either.
They did the best they could think of.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's such a good distinction.
But I feel like I'm making lemonade out of lemons, and I don't want to make lemonade out of lemons. I want truth.
Yes.
I want freedom, not just some trying to assuage
truth
my hurt.
Truth is a huge compliment.
Well, yes, it is.
It's an honor, isn't it?
Well, it is, but we're talking about truth that equals principle, not my truth. My truth is just my understanding currently.
Okay, so what's truth that equals principle?
Truth, that which does not change.
Ah.
The truth is they are good, I am good. We came together to have an experience.
Okay.
And I don't understand that experience, but I know how I feel about it. But if I'm forever saying, I can't get ahead because of what they did to me, and I have to be over here as a loser, as this, because of what they did, then we're all stuck, aren't we?
Yes.
So what I did after I saw that healer who told me about, no, you need to forgive them, I started to pray differently. And I said, okay, God, I am willing to experience forgiveness with my dad. And I don't know what that means, but I know you do. So just let me know what's my part and I'll do it. And every time I had a resentment thought about my dad, I said that same prayer. And 2 years later, I told you last night at dinner, I met my half-brothers.
Oh, yes.
That I'd never met before. We were all in our 30s at that point. Maybe I was in my 40s.
Oh, that's because your father left when you were...
He left when I was four, disappeared.
And changed his name, you said.
Yes, he did all of that. Yeah, he disappeared.
So, yes.
My older brothers had found him, or he had found them or something, and had been in contact. But me, I'm the youngest of three. I had talked to him a couple of times on the phone.
Uh-huh.
But didn't like, it turns out I didn't like him very much. But when I met my half-brothers and found out their life with him wasn't better than mine without him. Remember one of the last conversations I had with my dad when I was ready to confront, I said, why was your life more important than me? And if this will help anyone, this is what I had to do to protect myself in this. Uh-huh. He told me all sorts of things about my mother. Well, I went to my mother about it, and she denied it. What I know about my parents is they're both liars. And if I was going to have sanity, I had to accept I'll never know.
Uh-huh.
That's the forgiving thought. My definition of forgiveness,
what does that really have to do with you as an adult man anyway?
Well, you'd like to find out why there's such why you grew up in an insane household with adults who didn't like you when you hadn't done anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, is there a good reason why you left me? When I was four.
Yeah.
Is there a good reason why the other one was so verbally abusive?
Yes.
And treated me as if I had done something wrong when I hadn't? I'd look at pictures on my Facebook page. I was adorable. I was a cute kid.
I'm looking at you now. You're a cute man.
Well, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I can't look in the mirror anymore and hate myself. But my definition of forgiveness now is to give way for a new thought about the situation. Forgiving is to give way for a new idea,
mm-hmm.
so that I don't have to hate myself,
so
and I don't
dwelling.
Have to hate you.
Yes.
Well, just to keep, so I keep
yeah.
offering it over. I keep, and I've had great success with that type of forgiveness. I've also read Colin Tipping's Radical Forgiveness. I've taught classes in it. It's a great book.
Mm-hmm.
It's great teaching,
mm-hmm.
and it comes down to what makes it radical is the realization nothing wrong happened.
Oh, you know, you said last night, and I'd like you to talk about this for
mm-hmm.
a minute, because it is, there's a confusing aspect to it for me. You said last night, if all of this hadn't happened just as it did,
yeah.
you would not be the man you are today. And
yeah.
we're thanking God you are the man you are today.
Well, it's okay.
Yes.
It still has got its stuff, but...
But, so, talk about that for a minute.
In my healing with those people, I there's an amends process.
Mm-hmm.
And amends means to rethink. You know, that's why it's not about just saying I'm sorry. If you stole, you need to go return the money so that you no longer think of yourself as a thief. Well, I no longer wanted to think of myself as an abused child.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I was going to let my mother off the hook. As a teenager, I just let her know
mm-hmm.
what an awful mother she had been. And that's how I'd end arguments, because it was true. My mother was not a bad person. She just hurt so much that she couldn't stop lashing out. So... Later in life, she became a good mother to me as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
She really was. She was present for me and listened and stuff. Still had her own pain. 3 weeks before she died at 64, but we had no idea. I remember that Christmas Eve I was home visiting, and I remember looking at my mother thinking, boy, mother's due for a big change. I wonder what it's going to be. I had no idea. 3 weeks later, she went to bed and died. But during that trip home that Christmas, I remember she apologized for something yet again, and I said, look, mother, you don't have to apologize ever again for my childhood. I said, look at me. Look at who I am today compared to what I was. And I was a mess. I was a really, really big mess. I did not leave high school voted most likely to be a minister. Some one friend said you may have been voted most likely to need one. But I took all of that past and turned it into my story. That's how I became a minister, is I changed my story around and people wanted to hear it. And that's why I wanted to do this. So anyway, so mother, I said, mother, look at me. Look at who I am. We'll never lie about my past. We'll never lie about the childhood. But I'll never throw it up in your face again as a weapon. I said, I'm this because of that. And if one thing had been even a little bit different, I couldn't be this. And I'm really grateful to be this today. And so, thank you. And I think at that moment she actually saw how awful it had been.
Uh-huh.
Which may have hurt her even more in many ways. 3 weeks later, when she went to bed one afternoon and died, no fuss, no muss, found her 3 days later with the radio playing. She was done.
I was just going to say, she got to leave clean.
Done, and unencumbered. Done.
Yes.
Nobody, no medium has said that she struggled. It's just like, poof, gone.
Now, what about the opposite, which bothers me a little bit, because that's
the
what I was thinking
side,
about.
You mean?
Or, oh, what's that?
What do you mean? Well, that's the opposite of the light. You know.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking that. Oh. I was thinking, when you say everything that happened made you the man you are, and that's got a certain satisfaction and wholeness to it. But you turned out to be great.
Because I gave way for a new thought about it.
But what about people who say, I am what I am because of what happened to me, mm-hmm. and they're you know, murderers and
my
they're molesters.
Are you happy being what you am right now?
So where does that line come that you don't get to do that?
There is no line. If somebody came to me and said, yeah, I get to be this awful person because of this. And I'd say, are you happy with that?
Mm-hmm.
And if they say no, I say, then you have to give way for a new thought, a new idea of how you could be using all that. How are you going to serve doing all that? I was told my life is to be of service forever. Now, it didn't say drudgery. There's a great prayer where it says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. And then somebody once in one of those places said, God's will for me is to be happy, joyous, and free. I had no idea. And I thought, I can get on board with that. So serving can be... I can be happy and joyous and free, and that would be the example. People can come to me and say, how do you do it, Sean?
So you say, how does that, you know, how do you like that, how you are?
Yes.
And they say, not happy. What if somebody says, I'm perfectly fine with how I am?
I say, then there's nothing, we don't have anything more to talk about.
Uh-huh.
There really isn't.
Yes.
In the end, I'm pretty sure we're all going to die. Physical
sure.
deaths.
Yeah.
So far, it's been happening.
Right.
I have not heard reports about Lazarus of the Bible, whatever happened to him once he was brought back. He could still be walking around. The people that founded Unity, Myrtle and Charles Fillmore, they really worked at regenerating the cells. They really worked at that, and they both transitioned. But so I assume I'm going to.
Yes.
But what am I doing today?
Uh-huh.
How am I living? Am I happy with how I'm living today? It is our arrogance that we're all deciding how people should die.
How do you mean that?
I mean, the Holocaust was a horrendous, horrific act
that we don't understand. Right.
But we've got to understand the people whose lives were taken played a part in that we don't get. We're not just walking around and people, boom, boom, boom. There's something going on in the consciousness. If it's not blame... But we've all come together to have a journey and to dance here. There's a soul experience that we're having. And I can only assume, because how is it that other people who have had a gun to their head have not been killed?
Mm-hmm.
That they had another thought reminded with the gun that they were good.
And something was learned here because the descendants of those Holocaust murdered victims say never again.
Yes. Could we all wake up from that, or do we need another one to wake up?
Yeah.
What's going to wake us up on this planet? I love the story of the couple who survived the Holocaust. And the wife said, how could God let this happen? And the husband said, how could man let
this
happen?
Oh, yes, of course.
And that's, how can we allow? We're blaming God for allowing this stuff. God is love. And within love, I can choose either way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still love.
Okay, so I want to ask you now on that word of love,
mm-hmm.
love letters. You said that you don't write them anymore because who writes them and yada da da da.
Yeah,
but you could.
I do it mentally.
That's my point. Okay, that's my point. Of course, you do it mentally. I'm listening to you do it mentally, and everything you have said would be the most beautiful love letter in your own handwriting
mm-hmm.
to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did. I mean, I don't like to have people leave with undoable homework assignments.
Uh-huh.
But if you did even one every 6 months, you're a young man.
Mm-hmm.
You would have at some point quite a collection of your own journey in your own handwriting that will be part of church history, your church history. It will be invaluable for people to find this long after you're gone.
Right.
And learn who was the man behind the sermons, behind the lessons.
Right.
But also memory dims.
Well,
memory
I agree.
Memory dims. And who's going to remember everything you said?
Right.
Some may remember close, but we don't have perfect memories. And by the time you're 90, you might need a little reminder. You can go back and look at those letters.
Well, you're right. I do something similar.
You can't reread a phone call. Yes. What do
you're
you
right.
do?
I have a chat in my journal. I use on my iPad, and I have a chat with what I call Holy Spirit, but you could also call it highest consciousness.
Yes.
And I have a chat there. And what I seek are the highest ways of thinking. So I never ask why anymore.
But I'm thinking of some self-appreciation.
Oh, there's self-appreciation.
To yourself. But I want to say something about the iPad.
Yeah.
We have letters that are 400 years old that they look like they've been written yesterday. You can't play your Betamax movies anymore. Your floppy disks you can toss. This industry changes.
Well, I email it to myself and save it in various places.
That's right. And you're not going to be able to retrieve that at some time. I'm just saying on paper.
Well, you do
file,
have a point about that.
It would be so valuable for the world to have this, I think.
I'll keep that in mind,
okay.
Janet. Thank you.
And even, by the way, you're busy, and what if you even printed out those emails, but still sign them so that your hand has touched
you're
it.
You're smart.
So that people who read it in 100 years will be touching something that has felt the touch of your hand.
You're right, energetically.
Okay. So that's my thought.
Thank you. Let me look into that.
Because when you find, you know, when real history is discovered, it's because somebody has dug up a series of letters in John Adams' handwriting. That's how we know what really happened. The rest is supposition.
Right. Oh, if you want me to forget handwriting.
No,
I'm
I can
gonna
see
have
that.
To type
that's
it.
Why. That's why.
I'd have to type it because you'll never be able to read it if I write it.
Well, that could be. but then, give yourself a little P.S.
Oh, I can at least sign it. Oh, absolutely.
Sign it and maybe a little P.S. that I just thought of this.
That's
to add to
I
it.
Love that. That's a beautiful
hand,
idea. That now that's loving.
So forever, and it could be in the archives of Unity Church, and people will be able to go see those and maybe. You know, lift it up and read it and touch what you've touched.
That's neat. Something I do put out every week in our weekly newsletter is I write a letter.
Yes.
Every single week.
Nice.
With a message in it, but it has my experiences in it.
Yes.
And so that's a start. I want to put a book together of that.
Oh, good. Now, how about part of this book being the love letters to yourself, where you talk about, you know, dear Sean, I am thinking about it the older I get, and the older I get, the prouder I am of you that you were able to forgive your parents and create a new you through. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Beautiful.
But that.
How about a love letter
is about some guy's wonderful qualities, not just a notice.
Well, I've got a long flight home. Let me look into that.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you for doing this with me.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Thank you.
And for putting up with my homework assignment because I think it's important.
I think you're right. Oh, right. If it weren't, I wouldn't be listening.
Okay.
I'm listening loud and clear, Janet. Okay. Thank you very much.
So until next time.
Yes, indeed.
This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, your life is the special occasion to write a love letter. And I want to invite you when you come back, because I know you talk weekly and more, that to talk to you for half an hour.
Please, I'd like that.
Well, it was lovely, but I mean, I'd like another half on another topic that you'd like to share.
Yes, the answer is yes, Janet.
Okay, so anytime you're here, but thank you, dear. Okay, I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I look forward to talking to you all later. Bye.